Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime, violence, and poverty if we all agree to do one thing. Share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances. But most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, and my co-host, Minister Cynthia Marie Williams, every morning, Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we connect with women everywhere. Together, we can heal our world. But first, we need to heal ourselves. Listen online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. Call in and be a part of our discussion. 347-539-5639.
Good morning, and thank you for listening to The Female Solution. I'm your host, Naima Latif, and if you're listening online, we want you to give us a call at 347-539-5639. That's 347-539-5639. And, of course, press 1 when you're ready to join our conversation. And if you're listening online, we want you to press that blue button that says follow. So you can, of course, get our daily topics every morning at 6 a.m. on your smartphone. We've got a problem, and it is becoming a crisis. And you might not have had that problem in your life, but it's more than likely at some point it's going to touch you as well. What would happen if someone who may look a little bit like you committed a crime and you got arrested and jailed for it? What would happen if you had witnesses that could prove you were not at the scene of the crime, but your lawyer never contacted them, so you had no evidence to prove your alibi? What would you do if you were jailed for a crime you didn't commit and no one would allow you to tell your side of the story? Well, today we're going to talk to Paul Taylor, a man arrested and jailed for nearly 4 years for a crime he didn't commit. And as he shares his story, you'll hear the nightmare that could be you. Our criminal justice system is designed to jail people. And there's a whole monetary benefit to that. Not only do companies who use prison labor benefit, you've got a criminal justice system that is designed to continue to haul in bodies. And there is so much that we are not aware of that we keep thinking that things happen accidentally. But we're going to take a look at the system that has preserved the American slave system undercover. And if you've got someone who's in jail for a crime they didn't commit, you need to listen so you can understand some steps that you need to take in order to protect yourself and get out of the entanglement and the nightmare. Well, I want to say good morning to our guest, Paul Taylor. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Anytime I can talk to you all and just give out the facts and general information. Well, it should be general information because a lot of this, as you said, is undercover. A lot of people don't know. And I appreciate it. Thank you for having me as a guest.
Well, you've already got some callers from around the country listening in, ready to talk to you. And this is not something that just particular to Chicago. Of course, we're calling from Chicago, but we know that this is happening all across the country. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, because African-American men have already been profiled as probable criminals, if you're picked up on the street, they say walking while black, and they say, well, we got a call for a suspect, black male, average weight, average height, Well, that could be anybody. And so at any point in time, you could be the suspect for any kind of a crime. And because of society's hysteria, most people, if you've ever been accused of something, they just assume, well, you know, you must be guilty because, you know, the police, they don't lie. That's the mistaken impression. But give us a little bit of background about your case. When were you picked up? What were you accused of? And what ultimately did you have to do in order to get out?
Okay. That question has to be answered with
I guess a little pieces. First of all, what year was it when this happened?
In 2005, I was tried into a friend's house or just to pretty much get together or talk, hang out, whatever. You know, I was headed that way. I started trotting because I think it was starting to rain or it was drizzling. It was a light drizzle that day, if you can check the weather, for September the 25th, 2005. During that run, you know, the police stopped me, you know, because I was running. And therefore, when he stopped me, you know, for a few steps, I sort of panicked and ran because I didn't see who came around the corner. But I didn't really run from him or anything. So he thought I was somebody else instead of him asking or let me know that, you know, I fit a description or whatever in some type of crime or something that was alleged. He stopped me by force, and they tried to force me to get in the car. So I told him I wasn't going to get in the car. So, honestly, I did resist from getting in the car. That's the only thing I did do wrong. But when I did tell them that I would get in the car, they decided to beat me. We was in the back of the backyard. And back in the backyard where nobody could see it, they was hitting me with stick batons. And the stick batons is now that they have, they, you know, it's like, you know, it's a weapon pretty much for their defense, but they wasn't using it for their defense. They was also spraying me.
So you were running, and they stopped you and tried to get you to get in the car, but didn't tell you why you were being stopped.
Right. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. I appreciate that because they're very cocky in this area that I'm at, you know. And they always try to blame it on high crime or whatever, but at still some point, I'm an American. You know, I'm a United States citizen. I didn't dress to profile. I don't dress like I'm in a gang. I don't dress like you would think I'm in a gang or think I'm a thug. I just had on a jogging suit with white gym shoes and a jogging suit pretty much, a top to it, you know, and I didn't have the jacket. I just had like a top to it or something like that. And the shirt was like green, and the pants was like sky blue. I found out later, 2 years later, I'm gonna have to go up a little bit just to let you know. 2 years later, I found the identification was totally different. There's really three identification. One he gave, one she gave, and I wasn't wearing either. Either. She gave a description of a male, black, I think she said short hair, and that was it. And that he had a red and black jacket and some blue jeans. So, therefore, you know,
This is the description of the person that the police say they were looking for. Later on, you find out they're looking for someone who fit that description. They pick you up. You're wearing none of those clothes.
Right, and I hope you can remind me that you know, because this is pretty much a real deep story, because later I found this out. Now, remember, I don't know this, and, you know, I'm going to get a public defender, and I don't want a public defender because I hadn't had enough chance to earn $10,000 just in the bank for an attorney nowadays. Well, it's $5,000 to retain, but it's going to wind up being a $10,000 fee, you know. It's going to be a total of $10,000. So they know we in a sort of like a pretty much a it's prominently low housing, low development, you know, Section 8, stuff like that. So they know a lot of people around here don't have real big money, but some
money,
people
right.
may, but a lot of majority, about 75% don't. So they just pretty much stop and treat you as though, you know, they're going to get away with it. You know, it's pretty much like they're, in a way, slave master. I don't want to try to bring race in this, but, you know, they have always have been.
Well, we already know that's what it is. I mean, you're stopped regularly in areas where they say are high crime areas, and there's always some type of suspect. But if the description is so general, that means anybody at any point could be fingered as a probable suspect. And that was the whole conflict about the stop and frisk laws, because they were just stopping people driving down the street for no reason and saying there was probable cause. What was the cause? Well, you're black. Okay, and, you know, so that's kind of where we're at with this, where no African-American male has rights that an officer is bound to respect. So it's pretty much the same thing that was back in the days of what the Dred Scott decision, a black man has no rights, a white man is bound to respect. So that's kind of the state of being that most African-American males find them in, is that they can be stopped at any point, accused of anything, and sent to jail. Now, what happened? You say, of course, you were on your way to a friend's house. And now your friend, did she witness your being detained at all?
Actually, she did. Good question, because, as a matter of fact, she did. She, I didn't actually know until I looked over that way, and I seen her. We made eye contact during the time they hit me, but it wasn't an eye contact like, hey, what's up, how you doing, or whatever. It was an eye contact just happening to be trying to duck and switch around, or, you know, I don't know if that's the word, but I'm trying to just duck every hit.
So you're
you know
trying,
what I mean? I'm trying to
avoid the blows, and she sees.
Yeah, I'm trying to knock down they throwing the switches the baton, excuse me, at me, you know. So
now, did they see? Did you had a witness that was watching that? Did they see her? They knew she was there. They knew. Were there any other people that were there watching the attack on you?
Yeah, it was a couple of guys that at the time, but I could not remember their names. But she knew their names that were standing there with her. So if the lawyer, excuse me, the lawyer that would have been able to see whoever they are. Would have been the ones to see. I mean, during the investigation, she could have been one to see the other guys if she just would have got in touch with Malika. I believe her name is Malika Smith. We call her Mimi. So I told her if she goes into the area, she may can go and see Mimi, and Mimi saw the whole thing. But
that,
later
that, that's,
on,
that's another you, thing. That's another thing that you mentioned, that your public defender, of course, they assign you a public defender once they eventually, you know, charge you with this crime, and they give you a public defender. And the public defender that you were assigned, you gave them information that would have enabled them to prove your innocence if they had followed up. So in terms of witnesses, what you were wearing and all of that. But your public defender didn't follow up on any of that. And so how long were you in jail awaiting trial and awaiting just an opportunity to prove your innocence?
Pretty much 4 years. It was like 3 years and 10 months, I believe. It was just like 4 years. And that's out of the time frame. Right now my case should not even exist due to the fact that it's out of time frame. But in order for somebody to file anything, it has to be the attorney. If the attorney doesn't file it, how in the world can I ever be free? And that was the plan. I'm saying through this conversation that what happened to me was really is considered public corruption, the same as Vojvodich, I don't know how to pronounce his name, but the governor, the same as you can get a governor for trying to sell. To put up a seat is the same as what these people did in some type of way. I don't know if it's a money
I don't know if it was for each other. Hey, I'm going to give you him this time. You give me that one. But there's something going on corrupt. It is public corruption is what I'm stating. Due to the fact that the public defenders had all of the knowledge to get me off, it never filed one motion to get me out in 4 years. One motion. And there were several motions that should have been filed. If you don't mind me saying, can I tell you the motions that should have been filed?
Yes.
The motion should have been filed called a motion called motion to quash the arrest, because due to the
and
fact
what is,
that
what does
the
that do?
The motion to quash the arrest is the motion that if the law officer unlawfully detains you in any way, you should be free under the Fourth Amendment, that they you have a right to be free of unreasonable searches and seizures of your personal property, especially if it was stated that it came off of your persons. If a person don't know what person means, that means off yourself. If your pockets, socks, your shoes, your jacket, anything that is detained off you, detained off you is it has to be done in a certain procedure or way. You can't just merely offer your suspicion because sometimes being African, well, no sometimes, but majority of the time being African American, you want to have a European with the European mind, not just a white person, because there's absolutely some real beautiful white people in the country, in this world. So these was specifically the people that have done this was in... It's just a criminal mindset from the beginning to just, they pretty much gave me a case, and the public defenders pretty much made sure that the case will be solved by a plea, because the state, the public defenders turned into state's attorneys. They turned pretty much against me to not file any motion. The plan was to make sure I get this conviction. So instead of what their job was to make sure they make an attempt to get me off, they made every attempt to make sure that I stayed, and they helped deprive me of my liberty interest. If anybody don't know what liberty interest is, my freedom. They helped deprive me of my liberty interest, and that's the 14th Amendment violation that I'm told and that I've read. Section 1 of the 14th Amendment states that, I mean, a person that's been naturalized in this country should where they reside, meaning wherever I'm at in my city, my state, where I live, where I pay taxes or rent, you know, I should be able to have a fair and impartial tribunal or trial, you know, with a due process right. I should not be deprived of my liberty, you know what I mean, of my property,
Absolutely.
My personal property. You know, it's a lot of stuff I've lost in the county. I've been in a county where police officers just... through literally on a strip search and search, you know, because they got to bend you over and look in your cavity, look, you know what I mean? They have to look, and that's very sort of degrading. Well, it is degrading, and you have to do this every time you step. Yeah. They have to do this every time you step out of your cell. All of this is going on for 4 years, and all I'm asking for, a public defender who's trained, who is a lawyer, but just a lawyer, for the state, I mean, not the state, but for the county. And their duties is to investigate. Their duties is to give me a sense of loyalty, make me feel comfortable, make me feel, you know, comfortable for us, enough for us to that they're going to pretty much do their job and not have the confidence and the competency of doing their job. But, you know, they was trained and they absolutely refuse to do their duties in America, don't know what goes on in America, is paying taxes for this, and America's going to lose, because every time these people continue to do this, and people's like, people that this happened to has the right to be compensated by lawsuits, by civil rights and constitutional violations that is willfully done, and recklessly done, maliciously done. The end result, I was forced pretty much from the way you treated me, not forced by fists, but I was forced, even with a judge, by waving his hands and telling me that I can't talk. He didn't say it verbally, but he stuck his hands out and told me don't talk when it was my time to tell everything that they have done to me. He learned that I know the law, civil and criminal, and I've studied it and pretty much can recite various parts of the state law and the Constitution and the books of law, the federal rules of procedures and civil. I've studied this from the time they had me in there, and inmates considered me a jailhouse lawyer, and they called me Paul Cochran. So that was one of the good things.
That's cute.
They called me Paul Cochran, so I was actually, you know, believe it or not, I was honored to even achieve something like Dr. Martin Luther King said, just try to be the best of what you can be, and they just thought I was the best. They trusted me. Everybody in there said that did have similar problems or was going through stuff from having drugs on them, and the police just walked up to them and literally searched them and just took them to jail, or police did just put bags on them. Police literally put bags on you on the west side. I remember a guy named Maurice Allen was telling me, and he looked me in the eye.
They put a bag over your head to suffocate you?
Put a bag on you.
Oh, you mean
put
a bag on you mean in terms of drugs? I see. Plant drugs on you. I see.
Yeah, narcotics, yeah. You know.
Ah.
So I hear
that all the time, that people will be accused of carrying drugs, and they say, well, that wasn't mine, you know, that wasn't there before. And you know, if an officer plants it on you, who's going to be believed, right?
You're exactly right. And the people who they do it with is the people who upset them at the time. The police have so much power. I know it's great police officers now, but we're talking about the ones who are not straight. We're talking about the ones that is corrupt. And there should be more and more investigation into this public corruption, because they are committing crimes. They are literally taking minorities, even, you know, my Mexican brothers, you know. I got Mexican, I mean, far as, not real brothers, but, I mean, you got some good
Spanish
people.
You know, Hispanics are being,
right,
being railroaded and deal the same way.
Exactly.
And
you got some great, outstanding Mexican people, and you got some great, Puerto Rican. You got great, well, white, black, Jewish, whatever. But some people being a minority into a neighborhood that is considered, some poverty, some, you try to prevent despair and decay, but you can't if you absolutely try to eliminate a person's mind, dreams, and hope by simply saying, where you get this from? And you tell them, that's not mine. And they say, well, if you don't get me a gun, you know, in other words, go tell me who got a gun to get off the street to pretty much make him look good, to make him sergeant, to make him prosper into his employment. You understand? So a lot of people that's in there that don't really, it's literally innocent. I mean, literally, you know, they are innocent. I mean, I know a lot of people aren't. But when a police can, in a threatening manner, like, okay, you ain't going to give me a gun, you're not going to give me a gun, or you're not going to tell me where you get them drugs from, or at the times when they plant them, they don't like the guy, you know, they're going to set him up, they've been waiting for him. You know, he told on him, he went to OPS on him, he did whatever. This is your bag. Mm. So if this guy gets into the system, if you get a public defender that is not even going to file a motion to quash the arrest, so while the officers just walked up to him, and sometimes they even lied and say, rocks and blows. Some cases, look at the cases that's dismissed. Some of the cases, if you all had a day, we had a field day up there. If you can take this story, I mean, I don't know if this is a good idea for your show, but I'm a fan now, and I got a comment I can make for us to make it a little better, you know, make it grow a little bit better too. Or, you know, if it's a party show like on a Monday where maybe you can go to the courthouse or have a day when this topic come up, or further into the investigation, you can see how when cases are thrown out or when there's a preliminary hearing, when the police do get up there, when the judge say, well, I know probable cause on this one. But the judge, but the officer was willing to say that this guy was yelling rocks and blows. And if anybody don't know what rocks and blows is, that's crack rock made of cocaine, and blows is the street heroin that they call blows. So if you're yelling rocks and blows that you got cocaine and you got heroin, and you're just out there, and the police is just humiliate you as a person to say that you would just be yelling that while he's about 50 feet from you. Who would yell you got rocks and blows while the police there, but you don't know that they're there. You're supposed to had not seen that they was there, and the police just scoops by you and just say, well, hey, I caught you trying to sell this. No, it's not true. You walked up to that guy. You took those drugs. You took the drugs off him, and you put the drugs on him. Or if you did get the drugs, he's not supposed to be doing drugs, but the way you obtained it, you know, was the violation. You're no better than him. You know you willfully violating this man's Fourth Amendment right, but he don't have a right in his mind. He doesn't have a right in that policeman, that corrupt policeman mind. He don't have. He didn't have his walking papers. He's like a slave. You didn't have your papers to say you can walk around here, boy. You know, that's how it's done, really. That's like the real, true life. You know, this is not TV. This is the real and the true life.
Yes. Well, this is one of the things that we do in exposing this. Of course, you're listening to The Female Solution. I'm your host, Naima Latif, and we have with us our guest, Paul Taylor, who's gone through, unfortunately, what is a common occurrence. And after a while, you begin to feel helpless, like you can't do anything. But if you know the law and you know your rights, eventually you can come out victorious. However, the process of getting to that point where you can be heard is the biggest challenge, because the society assumes that you're guilty until proven innocent. We're going to take a quick break. We come back. We're going to take some of your calls. Give us a call at 347-539-5639. Press 1 when you're ready to join the conversation at 347-539-5639. We'll be right back after this short message. Stay with us.
There are people who choose to make a positive difference in the world. Our job is to bring you their stories to motivate you to do the same. Join us each week, host John Alexander and Naima Latif, as we bring you the educators, entertainers, elected officials, religious leaders, and community activists whose works are transforming this world. Find out how you can make a difference too. Be inspired. Watch The Media Connection.
Hi, this is John Alexander.
And I'm Naima Latif. Meet people like you who are making a positive difference in the world.
Big difference.
Watch us every day on The Media Connection at www.youtube.com/TheMediaConnectionTV.
YouTube it. We'll see you soon.
Enjoy a clean home without lifting a finger. Come home to a totally clean house and have more time for yourself and your family. At Spick and Span Home Cleaning, we do the cleaning for you. Call us today for a free estimate at 773-936-9811. No house is too dirty. Again, that's 773-936-9811. We are waiting to clean for you.
And we're back. You're listening to The Female Solution. I'm your host, Naima Latif. And we want you to give us a call, 347-539-5639. Press 1 when you're ready to join our conversation. And now, of course, we had a chance to talk quite a while with Paul Taylor on Saturday. And you'll be able to listen to that. You'll be able to watch that interview online. Just go to our YouTube channel, www.youtube.com/TheMediaConnectionTV. And if you're in the Chicago area, you'll be able to watch that on next Monday at 5 p.m. And that's on cable TV channel 19 on the 28th of October. You'll be able to see the interview with Paul Taylor on our regular TV show. And, of course, that's 5 p.m. Monday and 12 o'clock noon on Tuesday here in Chicago. But, of course, You're now talking to people from across the country and, indeed, around the world. And corruption is not something unique to America, unfortunately. There are many places where those who are in charge of upholding the law are, in fact, violating the law. And this is what makes it difficult for people who don't have money to get justice. The criminal justice system is a money-making machine. And unfortunately, we're the product that is the commodity that is being used to make money.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned something a lot of people don't realize. When someone sues, and we've had various people on that have had major lawsuits and have some pending lawsuits against the city, state, a lot of the John Birch victims, people who were tortured into confessions and so forth, and we've had some of them on the show. But when they win, and you pointed this out, if there's a multimillion-dollar lawsuit that is won, then who is it that ultimately pays the bill for that? And you were mentioning how either some kind of tax is raised or something happens where some money is generated to pay for those lawsuits that are won by those who have been unjustly jailed. So now, tell us about that. The fact that when we've got these officers who violate the law and ultimately they are found guilty and or there's a settlement so that the person who was violated will just kind of go away, take the money, and just shut up.
Pretty much the taxpayers
pay the bill, right?
That's fair. Yes. And your taxes is going to go up because so many that was dished out in lawsuits. Now, I don't want nobody to get mad, think nobody should sue. The point is I want them to start doing their job and people monitor their behavior and monitor what goes on as far as, hey, I know a criminal is a criminal. Hey, I know people that has been victimized before. And it's hard for a victim to get on here or listen to this and like, you know, what about the victim? Well, the show is not about actually the victim. And I feel bad for the victim. I sympathize and empathize for a victim. But we're talking about when the public corruption itself, the public corruption is when you have a person, you design where he's going to go through that revolving door. They ask you when they stop you. You've been arrested. You're on probation. You're on parole. Now, when you say that, they're going to threaten you with, you got to give me a gun. You got to do this for me. You got to do that. If you don't do it, they're going to put that bag on you. You know, or, you know, that gun, or as they say on the street, put that banger on you. You know, if they put that banger on you, which is a gun, that's how we're going to get off. Now you got a gun case. And you know how America's feeling about guns right about now. So right now you got a gun case and you on parole or probation. That officer just sent you down to state. Now when you come back, guess what? The same thing can happen. You're a slave now. You have the right. You have no right in the people, the corruptions, or whether it's the European or whether whomever decide to be corrupt, they have the power to send you back again and again and again and again and again, especially if you do not get help. If you do not get help from a public defender or a lawyer. But remember, how can you earn money to get a lawyer if you cannot get a job with that felony and a drug felony? Some cases you can't get certain jobs, drug jobs. I mean, come on, you're going to work at a pharmacy? No, you cannot. Hey, if this guy, you stopped this guy for, you know, something, that in that case, he may not get a job because he was, let's say, for instance, the officer said, well, you know, he was drinking in the car and you had drink right here. I mean, come on. You can't probably get a CDL or get a driver's license for a certain driver's job because he helped mess up that record. A lot of this jails, I mean, come on down, they're making jails with 23 and 1 hour out. 23, it's called 23 and 1. 23 hours locked down and 1 hour out for your recreation. It's becoming a point where people are going to start investing into jail, and if you invest into jail, you're going to have a prejudice towards a person that's trying to do right because you want him in jail so he can make you more money. So, right now I'm considered livestock. That's what I am. I'm livestock right now.
And
if I can tell my story.
Yes.
What it is.
So now,
and
tell us about what happened when you got arrested and the whole,
okay,
the door slamming on your foot and all of that and
okay,
how long.
Now, I'm going to try my best to go ahead and ramble. Literally, I have to not stop because I'm going to tell you from beginning to end exactly what happened to me, from all the beatings in there, all what goes on in there with the officers, all what goes on at the Chester Mental Institution where they yell constantly at mental ill people. If they don't do anything right then and there, they take you down. And when they take you down, they lay you on the table and for hours and hours and hours. And, you know, the person that's watching you was the person that puts you on that table. So he can honestly say you're doing okay, or he can honestly just have you sit there another hour laying there stretched out because he's going to say you was the aggressor or you was too loud. That's too much
so
power.
When you're being beaten, what happens? I mean, who around is watching? Are there guards watching or are there inmates watching? And what? How do people respond, or is it just kind of commonplace?
See, they're in Chester Mental Institution or Community Center. Chester's a kind that they have people that's just called, they're like you're not case manager, but you're a watcher for the day. But it's a watcher. You're not a babysitter,
like a supervisor kind of person, or somebody who is there to keep you under surveillance, more or less.
Yeah, it's almost like a monitor person. They're like monitors. So they're monitoring you and your behavior and your way and everything. And they got a psychological training.
So if you show any kind of aggression, anger, or resentment, then they write it down as, you know, you're aggressive, you're dangerous,
right,
that sort of thing. If you show any kind of emotion at all. So here you are behind bars, you get beaten. But if you show an emotion, then you are showing signs of either instability or perhaps someone who is dangerous and needs further repression. Is that how they evaluate you? If you show any kind of emotional upset at all, that you are in fact possibly dangerous, mentally unstable, that kind of thing?
It sounds like it's
impossible to be a human being, because if you're provoked, how are you going to not show anger?
Yes. Yeah, that's it. So I'm going to go ahead and tell my story from what happened to September 25th, 2005. September 25th, 2005, once the officers restrained me, as they say, I had my hands behind my back. I had my eyes closed because I was fully sprayed, dripping sprayed with OC agents. Yeah, OC agents with pepper spray. But the OC agents, when it comes out, not only is this when you spray it, it turns you orange. You literally are glowing orange, and you're burning at the same time. So while I had my hands behind my back, what I did was I was trying to sit down and get my leg into the car because the back seats are very small, because they got equipment up front. So the seats are really pushed back all the way, really close to the back seats. You can barely get in.
Right.
So while I was getting in, an officer by the name of Paul Lorenz, And I think it's spelled L-O-R-E-N-Z, Paul Lorenz.
Yes.
So he just said, whoa, he just slammed it. He just, you know, like, yeah, I was like, you know, because I was letting him know, officer, I can't hardly see. Can you lift the chair up or something? I was just trying to get in. He said, no, just get in the car. I tried to put my feet in the car. He slammed the door on my foot. I can hear the look. You know, like the little, I can tell my foot broke or fractured or something. I can tell that. So while getting into the car, I was driving. I said, where are we going? He said, we're going to the station. I said, can I go to the hospital? I said, can I go for treatment? He said, I think my foot is broke. He said, no, you're not going nowhere. You're not going anywhere. You broke into that lady's house. You broke into, it was a call that morning. It was a call about 6, I don't know if it was 6 o'clock or something like that. It was a call like that in the morning about a residential burglary. And somebody had broke into a apartment complex. Excuse me. Sometimes I'm that young in the morning, you know, so I apologize. But
that's okay.
It was a apartment
complex.
So
that was when you finally found out why they actually picked up off the street is because of a call for a residential.
Yeah, but they never actually told me until I got to the county. I'm just letting you know. So I have to sort of come and go because telling the story, you're going to see that I found out some things later. So you got to sort of
And actually, this happens quite often. You know, people are picked up. So you never read any rights, just, you know, picked up, foot slammed, you know, broken foot, everything, taken down to the station, still waiting and still in pain and still not formally charged with a crime.
Mm. Right.
So many violations,
right.
But yet it's
right.
common.
Right.
It's common because...
It wasn't
the phone call that you're supposed to make when you get to, because that's what's supposed to happen, they tell us.
Well, I didn't make one of those in days, and they didn't read me any memorandum at the time of them trying to get me to confess. Part of this was trying to get me to confess because he asked me, where's a laptop? I said, sir, I don't have a laptop. You mean to tell me somebody took a laptop and why you stopping me? You see, I don't have a laptop, and why are you stopping me? He said, I fit the description. He lied then when he was upset because later, again, I explained to you, later the description was the lady over the 911 tapes was saying blue jeans and a red and black jacket. Like I said, I have on a green shirt and a very sky blue jogging pants, nylon jogging pants, no blue jeans.
One of the things, and I guess for our listeners who always feel that, you know, well, you must have done something. It's like the kind of a Rodney King situation. Okay, they were stopping him, they were beating him. He must have done something. That's always the assumption. And then if a person has ever had any kind of arrest record, that nullifies their credibility. And so that's the dangerous thing. I was explaining to, you know, a family member that you know, they got arrested for being around where there was a fight, and I was explaining, you know, this is something you need to get expunged off of your record because it, even though, you know, you were innocent and all of that, anything that happens in the future, they will dig that up and say, oh, yeah, this person, they got arrested in 2000 so-and-so, and so whatever we accuse them of, they probably did it. So is that what you see happening? A lot of young men, maybe at some point in their past, may have been stopped for, you know, carrying weed or whatever, or any kind of thing, or any minor altercation. If they've got those kinds of records, then that becomes you become basically a target when the police need to find somebody who, in order to increase their statistics of arrest, and they can say, well, you know, crime is down because police have such and such many arrests, and so therefore we're fighting crime. So would you say that a person who has any kind of record of any altercation or any contact with law enforcement at all becomes a target whenever there's a crime committed and the police need to find somebody to say did it?
Well, yeah, that's true because once you go to the station, once he, because I was always, you know, I wasn't exactly squeaky clean, but it's not the point of what happened that day. And what they did was use my past, like if I ever had a burglary once before, maybe 10 years before that or whatever, they look at that and now they're going to build a case after they arrest you and they do a checkup on you. When they run your card and run your name, if things you ever done before, they can determine what they're going to do with you. You get smart. Let's say, for instance, hey, man, why you stop me? You say that. And then the police intervene by saying, well, look, just shut up and be quiet or, be, you know, let me do this and you can go. And you're like, but yeah, man, but I'm asking you, why did you stop me? Someone's right there. If you piss that officer off and he's pissed, now he's in power because he can just take you to the station and let you blow off some steam, but you're going to take a picture. He's going to give you disorderly conduct. You can take a picture. He can do whatever, have you take a picture, run your prints, do fingerprints, because you're going to spend the night, you know, in jail. Now you got a record, whether it's a misdemeanor or not, because he decided to do something.
So once they take a picture, you know, and you get the mugshot and all that, then you have a record of arrest, regardless of what may have happened after that, whether the case is thrown out or whatever, but you are on file, you have prints on file, and so that becomes the thing that follows you. So whenever you're arrested, and the key thing is that if you're repeatedly arrested, as so many young men are, and older ones as well, then you can always be somebody with an arrest record, even if you never do anything. Would you say that there are a lot of men out there that have arrest records, extensive arrest records, and may in fact be squeaky clean, but because they fit the basic profile, you know, black male,
I'm gonna tell you now, it's going to be one out of three that's either going to jail, going to get arrested, or going to get convicted,
One out of every black male in the country is in some way involved in the criminal justice system, either been arrested, either on probation, or doing time. Those are the shocking statistics, and I don't know of too many black males in America that have not at some point been stopped and accused or searched and have done nothing many times. And so you could just be, as you were, walking while black. You're just walking down the street, but it happens. So now, you were telling us that you got the foot broken. You're trying to get treatment. They wouldn't send you to the doctor. You eventually, you know, you're behind bars. Now, tell us about the psychological evaluation, because that's another thing that is such a trap. And we've had callers who've had that situation, male and female. Once they tell you that you are not psychologically fit, that designation follows you wherever you go, so that whatever you say from that point, you are not believed. You are actually, whatever you say is dismissed because they've determined
it's called like mentally incompetent or mentally ill. To some degree, it can be seriously mentally ill, SMI, or it can be just a mental illness.
Yes. Well, you've got some calls on the line I want to talk to. You want to give them a chance to weigh in on this. What would you do if you were unjustly jailed for a crime you didn't commit and no one would hear your story? It's pretty scary. Give us a call, 347-539-5639. That's 347-539-5639. And we want to hear from you, and then also we're going to give you some tips on how to protect yourself when it comes to being able to identify every single person that violated you, because at some point you do want to hold them accountable and you do want justice. Let's go to our sister Rashida here in Chicago. Rashida Ali, peace and blessings to you, my sister. Thank you for calling this morning, and we know that you've got quite a bit of a story yourself, but thank you for joining in on the Female Solution with Paul Taylor, who's definitely had a harrowing experience. How are you today?
I'm good, and you? I just want to say that of a PC law.
Thank you.
But this illegal detention, they're having settlements given for that. Fortunately, I was able to file under Heather versus et al. And received the settlement. But I tell the young people, you know, that go to jail and haven't really done anything to be detained, that not to, you know, feel inferior about it, because if they do research, they'll find out that Jesus went to jail, Paul went to jail, and most of them, a lot of people who were credible had gone to jail. So if you have not done anything, just, you know, stay prayerful and keep the faith. And there are some legal precautions that can be taken if you're illegally detained. And so a lot of our people are being detained because of association. And they receive a lot of punishment because of detention. So I don't know what we can do as a community other than stay prayerful and take actions that would sort of decriminalize some of the doings in our community. So that's about basically what I have to say about the detention.
Yes, you're right. You're right. A lot of prominent people are going to jail, so we need to take the stigma off of that looking at the fact if someone has ever been jailed, and they're probably a bad person, they're probably a criminal, they're probably not trustworthy. Because as long as we have a criminal justice system where it is corrupt, you have people who continuously, there are complaints about them, whether it's brutality or lying, and they're not removed, then we really can't call it justice. Too many people are on the side of the law are breaking the law, and it's repeatedly revealed, and yet these same officers, these same lawyers who are incompetent or maybe just too overloaded to be competent are still handling cases and mishandling cases.
May I say something about
you were saying about how go right ahead.
May I say, first of all, thank you for everything and every comment and everything. And I wish it was a way that we had some type of legal fund, or I had a legal fund, or, you know, or something to help me support for a real – I've never had a real attorney. I've always had – someone that was willing to throw my life away every time I wanted to get it together. Every time these people stopped me and threw away, I spent about 4 years in a county with no one giving me a motion. Now, here's what the problem is right here, and I want to explain this to her. Here's what the problem. A public defender, if she or he does not try to get you off, you're going to jail. You're getting the conviction. If they don't explain to you everything that needs to be explained, if they don't show some type of compassion for your case, they got lots of cases. They got lots of people. I understand that. I understand people are human. I understand people make mistakes. What I'm saying is willfully, I'm not going to represent Rashida. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to represent Miss Ali. I'm just not going to do it in my mind. If you do not do it in your mind and you do not help Miss Ali is going to get a record. And we're talking about a felony. We're talking about a felony of something you hope. I want to be a lawyer. I want to be a lawyer, and this is getting in my way of me being a lawyer. I got the knowledge, but God blessed me to go through this. God sent me through something. And whether you believe in the Almighty Allah, whether you believe in Jehovah God or Yahweh, or you Jewish or Muslim or whatever religion, what I'm saying is a lot of us do believe that in a higher spirit, and that the higher spirit is nothing less than good. You know, God Almighty is God Almighty, and we truly, truly believe that. But with the system,
yes, I mean, you have
you down
you have
to make you right. The system breaks you down to make you not It makes you go against your own. It makes you bitter. It makes you angry. And what in there? How can a person tell me that I'm breaking the law and I'm wrong, and they study breaking the law and they're wrong right in my face repeatedly?
Absolutely. We've got some more callers.
They're studying.
Absolutely. We've got some. Yes. And they're still having the jobs that they have, which is what we have to do. And I'm going to give you a chance to name some of those names of some of those who violated.
Please, before the broadcast, absolutely.
Well, let's go to caller at area code 773-401. Thanks so much for calling us on the Female Solution. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your question or comment.
What's that
area code?
That's
area code 773-401. You're on.
Hey, how you doing? I'm Officer T.C. McCoy.
Yes, Brother T.C. McCoy. Yes, one of the good ones. Thank you so much for calling in. Well, I'm glad you called. You know, Paul Taylor's got one of those common, unfortunately, common cases, black male walking down the street, picked up, shoved in the police car, taken down to the station, treated pretty much as, you know, okay, we got a burglary, you did it, and held years while they tried to force him into making a confession or taking a plea or plea bargaining in order to justify their arrest. What should a citizen do when they're in that situation? You're on the side of the law, and you've seen that there are the good officers and there are the not good officers. What should a person do when they are accused and they can't get anyone to hear their story, or even contact the witnesses that could, in fact, prove their innocence?
Okay, thank you for letting me come on today. I really appreciate this. First of all, let's learn to label things correctly. He was not arrested.
Okay.
He was kidnapped off the street.
Ooh.
All right. Go, bro.
Go. All right.
I felt that one.
Okay.
Yes.
As you know, I've been working on a story for 16 and a half years about some officers on the west side of Chicago that Chicago Police Department put together with the FBI, the U.S. Attorney, and the Cook County Sheriff's Department to convict them for crimes that they didn't commit, to get me, my deceased partner, and a commander, and another officer for just taking care of a community. So I understand that man's plea and his passion. Also, there are attorneys out here. There are some attorneys out here who just went to law school to collect a check. They don't even know their profession. It doesn't to know
go ahead, bro.
When a crime has been committed. First of all, you have 97% of the Chicago Police Department who are good police officers.
You understand? Yeah, I believe that. I believe that.
93%. 7% are slugs, and they have to be identified. Now, they're not known out there as slugs. Sometimes police officers know that other police officers out there running rampant and don't say anything. But that was not the case with us, because you could not work over in the Austin district, because the community was totally empowered, and they had the power to identify these officers, and they took that away with community policing. When they took away community policing, they took away the opportunity for the community to identify the good officers and the bad officers. I don't know.
There you go.
Well,
tell us about community policing and how that works and how that does, I guess, give us kind of a checks and balances so that the citizens can point out officers that are perhaps mistreating people as opposed to protecting people. How does the community policing system work?
Well, community policing, to me, how it was designed by Commander Leroy Shields to work, was that it gets a community together to learn who the police are in that community. And the community also identifies the bad people who they suspect of doing crime in that community. A lot of these officers do not have the foresight to go out and investigate crime. So what they do is they pick up or they kidnap a gentleman like this gentleman said he was, kidnapped off the street. And then they build a case around that gentleman And then you got some slug state attorneys or U.S. attorneys who come in is looking for a promotion, and they think this case is big enough. So what they do is they do what I call the Alfred Hitchcock presentation. They create a thing about how this gentleman committed this crime. What they do is they keep you in jail for a long period of time or detain you. And then what they do is they say, consider this time considered served so you won't get in. We won't look bad.
Right.
You know,
preaching to the choir. Yes.
That's true.
And then remember now, once you convict yourself of a crime, very seldom do you have a legal redress in civil court because the judge
That's what I told you.
You normally did this crime. So what happens is, and I understand this, but see, I've been fighting this fight, as you well know. That's how come I called in today. I'm with Munir Muhammad, Boise Edwards, and Harold Davis, and we have formed a coalition along with some other real black men who are not moving.
All right.
Yeah.
We have to speak up and speak out. And I love being the police. Let me just qualify that right now because, see, when you are the police, the lawbreakers know who the real police are. They know that you're going to do your due diligence, and you're not going to just go up and just snatch someone off the street. As I told people, the reason I'm speaking out, and I always spoke out, see, this is not me speaking out because I'm retired. I've been speaking out for the last 16 and a half years since these gentlemen have been in jail, and my thing is now coming to fruition. I know how the police, they got policemen. And brother, let me tell you something. It ain't the white policeman that I'm fighting because it was white policemen that worked to my demise. It was 60 law enforcement people worked to the demise of 25 people. It took them 1,571 days to perfect this conspiracy. But it was the black or so-called American Negro police who seen the opportunity to get a promotion. And they worked to our demise, to the demise of that community. And if you notice or not, there is no more community policing apparatus in the city of Chicago. And you say, well, why? Well, what happened to you is why. Because you would have a mechanism where the people in the community could come to court and tell the judge, hey, listen, that ain't that guy's stuff. You know, that guy don't do that kind of stuff. He might do this, but he don't do that. And so what they do is, what about our young black men who walking down the street and they really don't have any direction? Pants down, and they get real jazzy with the police, and the police don't have nothing else to do, and he has the power. See, he has the power, but not the right. Let's understand that. He has the power, but not the right. Not the right.
That's what the violation, but he has the power. That's what I'm saying. He do.
And see, one thing about us as black people, poor white people or Hispanic people, we submit to the police because we have been trained to submit to the police. We don't
fight the slave master.
You know, and we go to court, and the judge is overwhelmed. The court's overwhelmed with us in there. And somebody says, hey, man, just say you did something, you know, forget it. See, but I'm not something too. You know what I'm saying? And I never had those kind of opportunities. Because see, I always went to work, and I believe that I'm going to treat people how I want to be treated. And I had a job to do, and I did the job. See, a lot of people don't do the job. They're there for the promotion. And by you having this fantastic show on this morning worldwide, a lot of people will know that there's people out here fighting, and we need to band together. Because like I told them, this is not my fight. I'm kicking their butt. But I like to hear from men like that. I think we need to get together. Because, see, once we get together as a fist and we ball it, we are more powerful than individuals. And I think that, and if you notice one thing, and listen to this, nobody knows, but Anita Alvarez was a panelist on the Dan Webb Commission when the Austin police went to jail. They had a thing called the Dan Webb Commission. She was one of the panelists.
What was it called?
It was called the Dan Webb Commission.
The Dan Webb
Commission. You up on Dan Webb, brother? You up on Dan Webb, huh?
Listen, I know the whole, I mean, brother went to school. school. So watch this. She was one of the talents on the Dan Webb Commission back 16 years ago. And they wanted to investigate why was there police corruption. And according to the old Mayor Daley, the one that just left office, this was going to stop all police corruption. But they've had more police corruption since the Dan Webb Commission and since the alleged corruption. There was no corruption in the Austin District, and I've been telling people that. And I'm proving that, but watch this. Only thing that ever came out of the Dan Webb Commission, and I want you all, your listeners, to pay close attention to this. The only thing that came out of the Dan Webb Commission was now you got to have a 2-year college degree to catch a person that don't even have a GED. Now, you explain to me, why do you need a college degree to catch a man that don't have an education? And what it does is it eliminates a lot of the blacks who are the grunters, who are the workers, who would apply for the job and do a better job than people with college degrees. Because people with college degrees are looking for upwardness in the police department. They want to be detectives and commanders. The guys who got the high school diploma.
So now, let me ask you this. Well, let me ask you this. In order to get a promotion then, do you need to have, do you need to build up your arrest record? Is that what gets a person a promotion if they show how many arrests they have, if they can make it look like, you know, they've really been diligent on the job, look, I arrested, you know, X amount of people, that sort of thing. Is that part of what may be fueling this drive toward increasing the arrests of people for crimes, whether or not they're ever convicted? But for a police officer, is that the way they get promotion?
Okay, thank you for asking that question. I used to tell people the way you get a promotion is you have to have $50 in a Ouija board because that's the only way you get a promotion. You get what I'm saying?
So 50 hours a week? 50 hours a week?
No, $50 to get a promotion and a Ouija board. Because first of all, me and my partner, Jerry Saffo, led the city in arrest. And nobody ever appealed any IRS. No person we arrested ever went to court and appealed any IRS, and we led the city in arrest. We were not out there trying to arrest people to get promoted. We were out there to do a job. And these other 11 officers that work with us were out there to do a job. So that's not the truth of that. How can, if you're a cook, if you say you cook and you're a fantastic cook, what test do you have to take to be a cook? Your promotion should be the work that you do and what community policing was outlined to do was that the people in the community would tell the police department, I think this gentleman right here would make an outstanding detective because of the work he did. They didn't want the community involved in that apparatus. They wanted to be able to control who get promoted so that when you go and do something, for your people, they could say, hey, listen, remember now, we put you there. We could take you away from that. That's be very
right.
Because
well, let's go to another caller.
Okay.
We've got a caller at 832. Oh, and Officer McCoy, hold on if you can, because I got another question for you. But let's go to our caller at area code 832-362. You're on the Female Solution. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your question or comment.
Hi, Naima Latif. Good morning. This is Warren Houston from the Know Thyself Radio Show. Calling from Houston.
Oh, good morning.
Good
morning.
Thanks so much morning.
For
good
and
morning.
You say you're from Texas?
Yes, Houston, Texas.
Oh, Houston. Yeah. Oh, yeah. All right. Another hot city with some of the same situations. Yes, so of course, we're talking to Paul Taylor, who has the typical black man story, you know, walking while black, snatched and basically kidnapped and thrown in jail and then held there until he finally they broke him down and made him confess to a crime so they could look like they were innocent in picking him up. And, of course, we've got Officer McCoy on who's one of the good guys but is giving us some insight on the whole dynamics of the police situation. Now, they're in Texas. I know that there's a very high incidence of racism. Do you all have a corruption issue going on there as well with the police?
Oh, of course. I mean, that's everywhere. That's all over the United States. You have police corruption. You're going to see that. But there's several issues that I wanted to key in on as I'm listening to you. First of all, I wanted to answer the question to your subject or your topic. Yes, I have an uncle who has spent the last 33 years in prison behind killing a deputy sheriff in the Fifth Ward here in Houston, Texas.
Oh, my.
California.
Yeah.
So we are working that now to get that overturned. And out the way, I was 9 years old. I'm 42 now. And I remember when it happened. But at any rate, there's so many things I could say about this subject. And to let you all know, I've been studying law on my own for the past 4 or 5 years, and I am a law student as well.
All right. Go, bro.
I think, and this is what we're doing here in Texas, we have formed, what I'm doing anyway, we have formed law study groups because education is the key. And I think we forget, if we don't go back and look at how this country was established and was established and what it was established on, if we don't go back to the beginning, we can sit back and talk about these issues for the next 100 years and they will forever be where they are. Well, first of all, for justice, we're going there for the wrong reason. The courtroom is not a place for justice. The courtroom is an adversarial system. It is a fight system. May the best man win. It's about strategy.
Yeah.
That's number one. Number two, we also have to understand that anyone who gets an attorney for any reason, you are deemed to supposed to know the law. Anyone who gets an attorney for any reason is considered as a ward of the state. Well, what do you mean a ward of the state? If you research that word, you'll find a ward is someone who is incompetent of taking care of their own business. So you have to have someone to take care of your business, and then you go get someone you don't even know if they're capable of taking care of your business. The courtroom is a place for games. It's just like the basketball court, the tennis court, you have the courtroom. And this is the thing that we don't realize. If we go back to the founding establishment of this country, the country was built off of distrust from the beginning. This is what we have to realize.
Yes.
These people that started the United States, they were getting away from government tyranny. So there was a distrust for government. And this is why the Constitution was established, because a man's rights doesn't come from another man. A man's rights come from God. The Constitution was supposed to be put in place to protect those rights that come from God. You know, there was a time, I remember what year, they took civics out of school. Why they took civics out of school? So you would be uneducated to the law. Because basic things, I mean, I can sit up and, I have to really catch myself because I could talk about this subject for 2-3 hours because there's so many things.
You're pretty good, too, bro. You're pretty good. You're pretty good when you're going to be a good attorney. You're going to be a good attorney.
We have to educate our people. You know, I'm going to take a simple traffic stop. I'm telling stuff people that attorneys will not tell them because they're too busy trying to line their pockets. Now, a simple traffic stop, and I don't know if you all know this, but all traffic stops are illegal. As long as there is no damage involved.
I know what you mean.
Okay.
Elaborate on that one, brother. I know what you mean. Go ahead. Yeah, I know what you mean. I really do. Let them know what you mean in there.
Okay. I'll go back to that. But let me break it down. This for the common citizen who goes in the courtroom for a traffic ticket.
And
the first problem is, the jurisdiction was not stated. I can turn around and do a writ of error, a writ of quorum nobis, say you need to state the jurisdiction. If you don't state the jurisdiction, then you need to dismiss this case. None of the jurisdictions are ever stated in any cases. We don't tackle that because nobody tells us to. Secondly, we go in.
Wow.
And we go in, and then, you know, they're telling you, the first thing they do is have a hearing and say, well, how do you plead? Do you plead? Well, how can I plead when I've never saw a complaint? If I never saw a complaint.
Right, the complaint. You're right. Yeah, right.
Who's someone's
me? Right.
Who has a claim against me? I don't even, and you asking me to plead? How can I plead and tell you something innocent or guilty?
Right.
I don't even know what the complaint is.
Every time
you come into court, there must be a cause of action. And just like Texas and every other state, I got a big book sitting on my shelf right now. It says Texas Causes of Action.
That's right.
If it's not in that book as a cause of action, you have no case. And a traffic ticket is not in the cause of action books.
So therefore, you can't be demanded to go to court for a traffic stop because there was nothing, no specific, a cause of action. There was no reason for you being stopped.
Right. Exactly. Right. So even if you would take it to trial and there is a cause of action, then you have to realize that every cause of action has a certain amount of elements. So let's say this cause of one cause of action has four elements. Not only must you have a cause of action, but you must be able to prove each element, like a four-legged table. If you can prove three elements and you can't prove the fourth element.
Go ahead, brother. Go ahead, man. You preaching to the choir, too. Go ahead, bro.
You know,
So let me ask you this. If you're driving down the street and then you see the police lights and they pull you over and say, you ran that red light back there. That's illegal. They can't do that, or they?
Technically, it is illegal. And I'm going to tell you why. The other brother was asking me to tell you why it's illegal. What would you guarantee under the Constitution?
You guarantee your right. The Sixth Amendment say you guarantee your right to effective assistance of counsel.
First Amendment freedom of speech, liberty.
Right.
I don't have it in front of me. To have liberty in your papers, in everything. You're basically guaranteed freedom. Now let me ask you another thing. Who does the road belong to?
Who does the road belong to?
Who does the road belong to?
The taxpayers. Does it belong to the taxpayers since we're paying for it?
The road belongs to the public, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Anybody can use the road, okay? Now, secondly, since the road belongs to the public, if you purchase a vehicle, whose vehicle is it?
It's yours.
So you mean to tell me I can buy a vehicle? An automobile. Let me use that term. I have to use the correct term. I can buy an automobile, and I can drive it on a public road, and you can give me a license and tell me what I can and cannot do with my own automobile on a free road? We don't think.
It doesn't make sense, does it? And we're not challenging these things that don't make sense.
Exactly.
Now something also that happened, let me ask you this question also, because Paul actually is trying to represent himself in court, which is you're legally, you have a legal right to do that, and yet the way the court system is designed, they don't want you to represent yourself. But if you have a lawyer who will not follow through and do the research and gather witnesses that can prove your innocence, then and this is the public defender that they are assigning, and they won't investigate facts for your behalf so that you can be exonerated. What else can a person do? Because he had a lot of resistance even trying to – what they tried to do is prove him mentally incompetent so that he was not able to defend himself. So what does the Constitution allow you in terms of your defense?
Okay. This is what you have to realize. Anytime, this is why education is so important, because you have a right to represent yourself. And I understand what you're saying, how they'll try to keep you from representing yourself. They want to get an attorney and all. They want – right, exactly. But you have to realize this. Any time that you feel like your constitutional rights are being violated, you are to remove that thing from state court to the federal jurisdiction.
Mm.
And this is what we're doing here in Houston, Texas. We've gotten off of them, and please don't get me wrong. I'm not saying racism doesn't exist, and I'm not saying that a lot of stuff has happened to us as a people of color, because I agree with all that. But my thing is, I think ignorance has done more harm than anything. And that's why we have law study groups here willing to connect with anybody across the country. It doesn't matter, because I love this. I love educating the people and seeing people say, wait a minute. We're going to talk rules, regulations, strategies. We're going to talk Constitution. We're going to understand the difference between common law and civil law and how these things operate. We're going to understand where my constitutional rights are being violated, when I can move one case from the state court to the federal court, when I can move a case from the municipal court to the state court, and understand these things, and understand what jurisdiction and how to operate in each of these jurisdictions. This is what they've done to us, is they have capitalized off of our ignorance. And Well, that's what I am learning about being around these courts. It's about being around these courts. If you know your stuff, they're not going to let it get on. I don't know what it is about their record, but it's something about their record. If you know your stuff, you're going to get what you want and walk out of that court.
Well, you're listening to The Female Solution. I'm your host, Naima Latif, and we're on with Paul Taylor, who's got a common case, black man walking, arrested, thrown in jail, and forced to plead guilty to something in order to get out. And if this has happened to you, give us a call, 347-539-5639. We're fortunate to have Officer T.C. McCoy on, who is giving us kind of an insight on that whole police corruption situation. And now our brother here from Texas, give me your name again, brother.
This is Warren Houston.
Ah, yes. Warren.
From the Know Thyself Radio Show. You've been on the show before.
Yes. We'll have to come on there again as well. And yeah, I love the way you educate, because, well, when you know the Black Panther Party, that was one of their key features, that they would stop officers that were harassing people and quote the Constitution and quote the law that was being violated, and that's why they were such a threat, because they were teaching people the law.
Yeah.
We've got some other calls on the
line.
I want to give a chance to weigh in on this. We've got our brother Pianchi from St. Louis. Thanks for joining in on this conversation. And I know that you all have actually been active in running out some of these corrupt officers out of St. Louis. And we need to probably do that sort of thing here in Chicago. But what are some of the things that like a community police system can do when it comes to pinpointing corrupt officers that are perhaps chronically abusing citizens? Brother Pianchi there in St. Louis,
I
success in that.
I'm pushing wrong buttons this morning. I'm sorry. But no, this is a really good discussion. And he is absolutely right in the many of the things that he mentioned. You know, on the automobile, the reason why come they license you, I mean, you can have an automobile and keep it as property. But when you operate on a road, operating on a road is a privilege, that they say. But and here's another point, too. People don't know that when you have cases now where you have municipal police is going on your property and towing your vehicles without due process, which is against the Fourth and the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution.
That's right.
And the reason why these things go on the way they do is because people don't know the law. They don't know the law.
That's true.
Now, I've got a question, and Brother McCoy, maybe you can explain this, because when an officer, they've got a gun loaded, and they got a baton in their hand, they got a taser, and you're trying to quote law, what can you do to prevent yourself from being beaten down as you quote the law, because they want to show their authority over you and you may in fact be provoking greater anger? How do you stand up to that? How do you declare your rights and not feel the backlash of an angry officer who is armed and you are not? What do you do?
Thank you for letting me come in. And those two brothers that you have on, those three brothers are doing a fantastic job of explaining what's going on in our community.
Thank you, brother. Right on. I thought they were doing a good job, too. Yeah.
But first of all, let me tell you this. How do you do it? You get rid of Terry Hiller, who they hired for the Taser Company, hired a black ex-superintendent of Chicago Police Department that go around and tell people that, instead of shooting him with the gun, we can now tase him, so that he's out there working for these people who are now licensed to come in to shoot our people with this taser gun. Because a lot of times there are situations where you don't even need a gun or a taser to detain our people. It depends.
Right.
On the
people. And people have been tased to death. I mean, you can still die, yes.
Yeah, but listen, but what happens is, what I'm saying is, you got people out here, officers, and some officers use these taser guns, and they use them, illegally. I've had a situation where I interviewed a young man who was in the lockup, and he said to me, I was telling these officers that the person they looking for is on the other side of the room, and they told me to shut up. And I said, well, that's him. And he said, the guy just took this taser out and shot me with it. And he said, brother, I'd rather have been shot than have been shot by that taser because I've never had no feeling like that in my life. And a lot of these young
it's an electric shock, isn't it?
It's a highly potent electrical volt. And what I'm saying is they hire our people, Terry Hiller, pay him a nice salary to go around, and he's the face of Black America, and he's an ex-superintendent of the Chicago Police Department, and he says, well, you know, officers can now carry tasers and detain people. And if you shoot a dog with that taser, that dog goes into convulsions. So imagine what it's like to a human being. See, people got to get back and take a step back and quit looking and following the storyline of, you know, taser and gun. All of it's illegal. If the person can be detained by a mere conversation, he's not being a threat, he's not approaching you, he's 20 feet from you, do you need to shoot him 20 feet from you because he got a knife in his hand? And he's not approaching you. See, we have to get away from the storyline of what they're telling you. I've had the opportunity to see, you know, some of these people who've been tasered. And, I mean, the experience that they had is quite compelling. And we need to start better training our officers. But, see, again, as I told you before, when you have people who are not of your background or your persuasion, and they are out there being on the police department because they need a job and they really don't want to be the police, but that's the only job they is. And you have men who they corrupt or they give them a record when they're young so they won't be able to become police. You're going to have corruption. You're going to have shortcuts. Corruption to me means shortcut. That's what it means. It means to do something in a shortcut way and try to get a result. And what they do is they the police department throughout America kidnap certain black people, whites or Hispanic, and they take them off the street. And as the two gentlemen said in St. Louis and in Texas, they don't know the law. And when you know the law, that officer knows when you approach them that you know the law, that you are not a lawyer, but you're familiar with certain elements of the law. And he treats you a different way. But when you don't have the knowledge to go into that courtroom and know that the evidence that's being presented to the judge is corrupt, now you might have a corrupt judge. And they might have they might be wanting to go to the appellate division or the Supreme Division in that state or in the federal court. As I said to you before, my officer's friends were arrested and taken to federal court. And they didn't even have a case on them. And as soon as they got in the door, and I got three of them out now on the street, told me as soon as they got down there, they were given a script to read and say, you did this. But these officers refused to bend. And we have men out here who refuse to bend. I commend that gentleman in Texas fighting for his uncle. Because if something was done wrong, if it was no probable cause, if there was something in that case that would allow him to be that case to be appealed, and that gentleman taken out of that situation and become a free man, I'm all for that. I'm not for one of these people out there on the street that commit crime and thinking they can use the law and get away from it. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is we need to be doing our due diligence. We need to band together throughout America. We need to be able to cross all kind of state lines to tell people that the corruption is not just in my state, it's in your state. And being able to identify what is corruption. And community police, you have the community working with the police department. So they know who the police are. They know the shortcutters. They know the ones who wakes up every day and got a bad reputation. They know the ones who are not out here doing the work that they're supposed to be doing. And they're collecting a check or they're trying to get a promotion. Those are the people we have to identify, and we have to have them quickly dismissed from the police department, because being a policeman, to me, was the greatest job in the world because I got a chance to meet all segments of the community, and I loved it.
Yes. So it's really not a question of black and white. It's really about wrong and right. And there are those who are trying to do right of all races, and those are the ones that the community will have a relationship with and are in a correct community situation between police and residents, there is harmony. The police officer is your friend. They really are your friend. They're the person that you can depend on to protect you. They're the person that you call when you're in trouble. They're the person that you trust if the relationship is right. But right now we've got this adversarial relationship because you have people who have the wrong motives that are on the police who come with hostility towards us and towards anybody, whether it's African-American, Hispanic, or even poor whites. I mean, if a person is a police officer and have that bullying spirit where they just want to show power with somebody, then they're really not there to protect you. They're there because of their own ego, and that's a problem. So we get rid of those kind of people. And then you have people who themselves, they came in, they were criminal, they were corrupt, they, you know, maybe did drugs undercover or whatever. So if they capture somebody and they take drugs off a person, you know, they may turn it in or they may keep it and resell it. Those kind of people, we need to get rid of them as well, because they're also on the force for the wrong reasons. So you're right, community policing is the way the community weeds out the good from the bad, so the community can have officers that they trust, and that's really the purpose. And any other than that, it's not a police state. It becomes more like, well, it becomes like a police state, like an occupying military that the citizens have to fear, and we don't want to fear those we're supposed to be serving and protecting.
I agree with you, and also let me add this before I get off your radio show. Anytime you have a bunch of officers who look like you that don't want to be in the community with you to police and protect that community, they want to be in a community where they don't have to deal with you every day. You understand? Mm. They want to be downtown. See, you have to look at your elements. And then you have people who don't look like you that is forced to work in your community. So, you know, you have to have an interest.
They don't like you either.
a lot of officers that I work with, and I can only speak with the officers I work with, they not only worked in the community, they lived in the community. And so when you have a vested interest in that community, you're going to do right by that community because they could knock on your door at any time. So, you know,
they know who you are and you know who they are. So should that be a requirement then that officers who work in the community should live in that community? Is that one of the things that would correct the situation?
No. That was never a requirement like that. As I said, you have a lot of black officers who don't want to work in the black community. They want to work downtown or they want to work in a peaceful community. They want to get up every day. And that's true. I mean, so you got people who don't know the lay of the land. And so they come into a community and they don't see right or wrong. They don't see good and bad. They see what they want to see. And then accordingly, they try to fabricate certain things. Like I said to you before, I know for a fact 93% of the Chicago Police Department are good officers. But it's always that element of 7% that overlaps that 93%. And now we have a problem going on, not just in Chicago, in the suburbs and throughout America. And what we have to do, like the gentleman did in Texas, is we have to become more informed. We have to find people who want to tell us the law and tell us not how to get out of a crime, but tell us how to prevent a crime from happening to us. And I appreciate you come on this morning and talk to your community and your audience throughout the world. And every time that I get an opportunity, I would love to come on. Thank you very much. Thanks to your other guests.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe we can look up
later.
Thank you.
Oh, definitely. Brother, in Texas, give us your contact information because we really do need to have a national organization to combat this. Where can they reach you?
Okay, I'm on Blog Talk as well, Know Thyself Radio Show, Know Thyself Radio Network, but you can also email me, Warren Houston, that's W-A-R-R-E-N, Houston, H-O-U-S-T-O-N, Warren Houston, at knowthyselfradio.net, that's K-N-O-W-T-H-Y-S-E-L-F-R-A-D-I-O.net. And Sister Latif, you have my number. You can just go ahead and jot it down. I won't give it out over there. But you can go ahead and take my number down. Anybody else, you can email me, Warren Houston, WarrenHouston, at knowthyselfradio.net. That's KnowthySelfRadio.net.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And And we're gonna. And when can we hear your show, Know Thyself?
We've kind of been on a hiatus, but we're coming back. We have the Know Thyself radio show, which is the lead show, airs every Sunday. I'm going to have an interview real soon with Kwame Kilpatrick's mother. You know, Kwame Kilpatrick just got 28 years in the penitentiary, and his mother is a former U.S. representative, Carolyn Cheeks Kilpatrick. She's going to come on and give us his story soon.
Wow.
But the Know Thyself show airs Sunday from 8 to 10 Central, and we have several other shows during the week, which is Black Wall Street, which airs on Wednesday night from 8 to 10 Central. BC Worldview with Tim Aldridge comes on Tuesdays from 3 to 6 Central. And that's pretty much it. But one thing it's so much I can say, but I want to say this to you all listeners about the Constitution. And know this. Article 6, Paragraph 2 of the Constitution says that the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. And any law that is made therewith, in other words, I'm not saying it correctly, but let me put it this way, that does not agree with the Constitution is not withstanding. And so what people don't realize is that laws are being made every day that are not in line with the Constitution.
That contradict the Constitution.
Right.
So they can be struck down. If the citizens are pushed for it, they can be eliminated. Things like the stop and frisk laws and all of those things.
Yes.
And everything that is in violation of rights guaranteed in the Constitution. If those laws are passed, they can be struck down, and citizens can, in fact, file suit to have them removed.
That's how it goes. That's what the United States Supreme Court is there for. They can pass laws all day that is unconstitutional, but unless the people speak up, nothing is going to be said or done about it.
Well, I certainly appreciate you reminding us of that, and I think that the more we know the law, the more we're protected because we have a weapon to fight with. Now, the thing we've got to do is continue to elect judges that are just and fair and not corrupt, and we also have to keep a watch on the officers that patrol our communities. And I really do think we need to have laws that say any officer policing a community must live in that community. That's something we need to push for, because you just like, you know where I live, I need to know where you live. And I think it's for our mutual protection, because if you're going to abuse your power, then you got to face some consequences. And you need to know that the citizens where you patrol know exactly where you live, so that you cannot abuse people undercover and get away with it. And I think that's the protection that we have to push for, is that you can't be a stranger and come and police our community. You must have a relationship with the people. And if you don't want to be the police in that community, you don't need to be a police officer then. Do something else. You know, sit behind a desk, be a clerk or something. But don't police an area where you don't know the citizens, so you just round up somebody at random just because. And that's what we as citizens have to push to stop. We've got some other callers. I'm going to give them an opportunity to weigh in on this. And, of course, we've got our brother, Minister Robert Floyd Plump. Thank you for joining us on The Female Solution. You're on with Paul Taylor, who is fighting a common situation, a black man walking down the street, and arrested walking while black, kidnapped more or less. And we as men and women have to fight against this kind of abuse. So give us your question or comment today.
Wayon Yashalom, Assalamu Alaikum, Amistad.
Oh, peace and blessings to you, my brother. Thank you for joining.
Yes, good morning. This is Minister Plump, Robert Floyd Plump from Chicago, Illinois. And I would like to know from your experience in the American system, do you believe that there is any justice in America concerning us as a people, for us, the so-called American Negro?
Well, that's a good question. And I think, like Officer T.C. McCoy pointed out, when it comes to officers, maybe 93% are good. Is that 7% that are corrupt? And, you know, I would say that's probably the stats when it comes to most things. I think in the criminal justice system, most people who go into law, they really do want to do good. But many of my associates who have gone into law, they have discovered that the system itself rewards you for bad behavior. It rewards you just like in Paul's case, if one person presents something that's wrong, then everybody has to agree with it in order for everybody not to be deemed wrong. Paul, can you talk a little bit about what happened with your evidence you presented and the fact that it was not allowed, and then the move to render you as deemed unfit and mentally unfit, and how that whole thing gets reinforced by each person so that nobody, more or less everybody's covering everybody's back. So if one person okay. does something wrong, then everybody kind of signs off on it. But Paul, tell what happened when you were trying to represent yourself in court.
Well, what happened was that it was a situation where I came into court after an officer named Mills, Officer Mills is a sheriff. He didn't even allow me to go to a preliminary hearing on October the 3rd. He let me take two steps in the courtroom, and you have to at least go about 75 feet before you can go and talk to the judge at the preliminary hearing. It's a process, a little hallway you have to go through and make a step and then go see the judge, you know. I took about four steps, and he stopped me when they called my name, and I said yes or here. You know, when they call your name out, you have to answer because you make an appearance in court. So
right.
he turned me right back as I said my name October the 3rd. Then October 21st, they said that they was trying to indict me. So I said, how can they try to indict me when the evidence that's trying to be presented and the way everything happened was against all procedure and it was unlawfully done? And if there's no information, well, I didn't know about the information until later, but I'm saying I never got a copy of the information or anything or the formal charges in open court like I was supposed to. So in open court, they're supposed to at least let me know what I'm being charged with the indictment. So at that time, I never knew about the indictment on October 21st. So what I did was I wanted the judge to let me represent myself because no lawyer, his name was Barrington or Barton Baker, Mr. Baker, who works for the public defender office, at the time, Ed Burnett, head public defender, he was supposed to represent me during the preliminary hearing because in Illinois, 725 of the Illinois chapter, of the Illinois Compiler Statute, 725, Act 5, I believe 102 and 103, it states that I was supposed to get medical treatment, and not only medical treatment, I was supposed to get an attorney to represent me. And by the Sixth Amendment right, I have a right to be represented by counsel, effective counsel. During that time, Mills turned me around.
So you say the court-appointed attorney never came to visit you, never followed up with any of your leads or witnesses or anything that would have proven that you were not at the location of the burglary at the time of the burglary, that your public defender never followed up and did any investigation at all, basically.
Yeah, well, what happened was, that's true, but what happened was there, I had two attorneys before, I mean, I had one attorney before my attorney, my trial attorney. There's an attorney at the preliminary or at the indictment to let you know your indictment. No one was informing me that I was being indicted until, the last minute. So what I did was I mailed the letter to say I wanted to represent myself because nobody is representing me. During October 28th, they told me I was indicted. And I said, when they called my name, I said, Your Honor, can I talk? So this is the third time I'm making an appearance in court. So they have to indict me within 30 days. So what I told the judge was, I said, well, Your Honor, I need to address the court. So he said, let him through, let him go. And finally, because I yelled, you know, hey, can I talk? So he was looking like, what's going on? His name was Judge Willie Wright, who has done nothing wrong but held a hearing. He held the hearing for me, actually, to really look out for me or to really do his job, really. So when I told him October the 28th, that, hey, did you get my letter? You never ruled on my motion. He said, well,
your motion to represent yourself. Right. Okay.
So So the clerk withheld my documents and my motion to the court. So here's the corruption. He withheld my motions to the court to represent myself. So what happened was,
so during
not
that
only
time,
that.
You were just behind bars then? So all that time, you were basically behind bars, not getting information, just in jail, you know, not able to make bail,
right.
You know, and
right.
basically just in there. And
right.
then
right.
you finally get to the courtroom for the hearing, and they're restraining
right.
you, so you can't even speak. So you had to force them to allow you to speak, even to address
yes.
the judge.
Yes. Yes. So during that time, he told me that there's nothing he can do about it then, but what is the problem? I said, well, Your Honor, that my document has been withheld. So we found out that the clerk, by him having a hearing right then and there, the clerk had my documents, and the public defender, Barrington Baker, had my documents, but they never filed it on record. So therefore, the judge couldn't rule. So therefore, that corruption right there and there, I could have walked in and there. So the public defender, this is off the officer now. The officers did their part, the corrupt officer, yeah. But later, it became the attorneys. See, everybody that knows the law, we know that the lawyer should know the law a little bit better, or know how it was explained to him, or the elements, like the other gentleman was saying in Houston. He knew all of this,
yeah.
like the gentleman knew in Houston. But the point is, they did nothing about it to release me, to have me released. So later I went to a preliminary hearing where I had a Judge Schultz. And I told Judge Schultz I want to represent myself because at the other place there was documents held and I want to be able to get my jacket, meaning I want to be able to get everything that's against me and get my discovery and everything and record and everything what's going on. So during this time I was trying to let the judge know at the first preliminary on 51st and Wentworth, that I never had a chance to speak or no one ruled on my petition to the court or my First Amendment right, my right to petition the court. I petitioned the court never heard it. So therefore, when I asked to represent myself, he gave me the right to do so, Judge Schultz did. I left Willie Wright. I'm at Judge Schultz at my, what you call, arraignment. So I'm trying to explain this, so I asked to represent myself. But some people say it's a fool to represent yourself, but I feel... if you know the law and nobody's representing you, you have to represent yourself because in the past they have sold me out like a slave and just to send me to go down and get rid of me like as though I was nothing.
So ultimately, what ends up happening after 3.5 years of not being able to – now, what was happening? Your case kept getting continued or what was the reason why you were, you know –
Well, you had a Dr. Kelly say I was fit because they had to do a BCX, a behavior clinical examination. It's called BCX. So they did a BCX on me. He found that I was fit. So instead of representing myself, I went on and gave the case to my attorney, the public defender.
Mm-hmm.
Her name was Brett.
Right.
Brett Morgan Bomber. Brett Morgan Bomber was supposed to represent me. When she got the case. She got the case December 19, 2005. She did nothing but ask for BCX when she got it. After I just had a psychological evaluation, she did another one immediately when she became my public defender. She did one on trying to get me guilty but reasonable, but insane. She wanted me to plead guilty but insane. I didn't want to plead guilty at all because I was innocent. So, therefore, she dragged the case out to force me to take a plea because she would not ask for a motion to do a lineup. She didn't ask for a motion to suppress the identification, which is a lineup or photos or anything dealing with my identification. She didn't want to suppress the testimony of the witness. She didn't want to gather my witness, was Malika Smith. She never gathered her or her friends to tell what happened on my side of the story or my alibi. She did nothing for the 2 years.
So basically what happens with a public defender, if they don't have time to do research, then it's easy for them to just have you plead something so they can, you know, get the case off their hands more or less. If
right.
you
they
plead
get,
innocent,
they
then they have to do research. They have to call witnesses. They have to get testimony. They have to get testimony of police officers. and that's more work. So what ends up happening, if you get lazy public defenders that don't want to be bothered, it's easier for them. If you're accused of something, they can say, well, look, okay, they accuse you of burglary, guilty of theft, we can get you lesser time and just serve your time, shut up and get out. So that's pretty much how the system is set up, correct? Just for you to just serve your time,
yeah,
whatever,
well,
and, you know, just agree to be guilty of something,
well,
so we can get rid of this case.
The system is a beautiful system. The system is a beautiful system for me actually to be released. However, you have certain people, as we were speaking on, it was sheriffs and officers, but also who did the most corruption was the people that could lose it all, the people that could get me released. If you don't have a motion that should be filed to have a motion to quash arrest, which is that's the law in Illinois.
That motion basically said that you shouldn't have been arrested in the first place, and that would dismiss everything. Is that what that motion does?
Right, because so many rights was violated. Right.
Right.
But the public defenders knew that I would win and get a lawsuit for everything that happened with my foot, because I want everybody to know, if they didn't, that I spent almost 72 hours in the lockup with a broke foot, and the officers hog-tied me because I was making noise about making a phone call. So they hog-tied me, so therefore I had defecated over on myself. Instead of taking me
to the
hospital.
You're in there with
right.
a broken foot. They have you handcuffed,
right.
shackled, won't let you go to the bathroom.
Right.
Your foot is broken. And all of these things, of course, are grounds for a lawsuit. But if they
mm-hmm.
keep you in there and until
right.
you finally confess to something, then that should eliminate your right to then file a civil lawsuit, because on record you have
yes.
pled guilty. To...
Exactly.
That's pretty much what's happened to so many people. Yes.
Right. So what happened was later on, what I did was I started to file grievances and complaints, right? So what she did was, she put in for another psych eval. So Dr. Kelly, who just had frowned me not fit. And I had to speak to two psychologists by law, a psychiatrist,
mm-hmm.
I mean, psychologist by the name of Sherry Coleman, which is an African-American. The African-American mm-hmm. said I was fit both times. Dr. Kelly said that I wasn't fit, and he's a psychiatrist. I'm trying to figure out why the European Dr. Kelly overruled the psychiatrist that said that I didn't get a third opinion. I was entitled to a third opinion, and I had a hearing. The hearing, she conducted the hearing, the one that asked for the psychological evaluation. She said,
so you said also that they forced you to take medication as well. And once you're evaluated as having a mental problem of some type, and you say they also right. forced you to take medication, even, you know, injecting you at some point.
Yeah. Well, they forced me to take medication because once during there in the 90-day evaluation, you while you're in the mental institution, you got to be competent. So by doing the competent, they gave me medication. And the workers there, the monitors, forced me to take the medication by surrounding me to take the medication. I said, I'm not court ordered. In order to take medicine, you got to be court ordered. They went against court orders or anything and made me take medicine. Therefore, I'm taking medicine in interviews and talking. I'm dragging. I'm slobbing at the mouth because I'm on so much medication.
Then you really look like you're mentally ill. Yeah.
Right. During the interview, Dr. Kelly seen me go to sleep during the interview because I was too messed up off the medicine.
Drugged.
So.
Right.
Therefore, when he came to see, he asked for 2 weeks. He said he gave me another date to come see him. I still was off the medicine, looked a little bit better. He sent me down and said I wasn't fit. He sent me down and said I wasn't fit because of my statement saying that I think my public defender is working with the state. He said I'm delusional.
Mm.
I said, how am I delusional when she's not filing any motions? How am I delusional when she's not filing any motion? I know that part of the law. She's not filing motions, so therefore she's against me. So therefore she's acting like she's working with the state and acting like a state's attorney, because a lawyer's job is to try to get you off any way he can, and that's by filing
right.
motions.
Right,
that's
how to make
like
you plea. Right.
Right.
Well,
in the minute
we've got left.
Like Malcolm
If you can name all of the people, because I only got about a couple of minutes left, but I want to make sure that you don't go on record, but all the people from the officers that arrested you on to the people in the court that just did not do their job, name everybody that you would name in a civil suit if you could file a civil suit for the violation of your civil rights and being a part of this old cover-up and everything else. Who are the people and what are their positions?
Well, after that, I complained about Brett Bomber. I got another public defender by the name of Joseph Barry Simberg. Then I got Mrs. Crystal Carbellos. And then I got Victor Erbring, E-N-B-I-N-G, or Erbring. All of those four public defenders, one after another, failed to correct anything that the other public defender did. Mm. What they did was, I had four public defenders, and no one filed in 4 years a motion to quash arrest and suppress the evidence. Because what the motion to quash arrest and evidence can also do, it can bar the evidence that was that will be entered in court or anything, or you can be set free. Why would you not have a motion that would set me free and try to take me to trial with them trying to say I've done something and never had a chance to help myself or gather my witnesses? Here, I'm going to trial without my witnesses that you didn't gather. And you sent me on every psych evaluation. And after that, Judge Thomas V. Gaynor Jr., actually, he put his hands up and said he wouldn't let me talk. He kicked me out of the courtroom. Hello?
Well,
yeah,
you know, he
kicked me out of the courtroom when I was ready to talk. He didn't want to hear me. I asked him, "Can I? You're not ruling on anything." He knew if I represented myself, I was going to file that motion to quash arrest. And if I got released, I would make all those people look bad. So therefore, he did not do that.
Yeah. Well, we're out of time
so
now.
So then I was.
But we're out of time now. But one of the things I wanted to give you a chance to name the people, because I think anybody who's a judge, we need to know who they are, because there'll be an election March 18th, and if we've got judges that are repeatedly not allowing evidence or in cahoots with lazy or just not competent public defenders, we need to have them removed. You know, there comes a point when we can't keep electing people to not do a job. People's lives are. So that's why I wanted to give you to name the officers and everyone who's trusting with our lives, so that, of course, if you do a job and you're sworn to uphold the law and you don't do it, then we as citizens have the right and responsibility to remove you from that position of authority, because otherwise you're destroying lives. So I want to thank you, Paul Taylor, for giving us your story. And, of course, we want all of you, if you have ever had a situation where you have been unjustly arrested, jailed, punished, and not allowed to speak, we want you to give us a call, 347-539-5639. Join us again tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. Central Standard Time. This is your voice to be heard. And we as a citizenship, we as people living under this Constitution must demand our rights, but first you need to know your rights so that you can fight against your rights being violated. Paul Taylor, and thank you, Warren Houston. Thank you, T.C. McCoy. And all of you who listened in and called in and joined in on this conversation, join us again tomorrow. Of course, you can always reach me on my website at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. Go to the books page and get your copy of the book, Slavery, the African-American Psychic Trauma, and understand how we are still fighting the old slave system. And don't forget to get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. I'm your host, Naima Latif. Until tomorrow at 7 a.m., may you all have a blessed day.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime, violence, and poverty if we all agree to do one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances. But most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, and my co-host, Minister Cynthia Marie Williams, every morning, Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we connect with women everywhere. Together, we can heal our world. But first, we need to heal ourselves. Listen online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. Call in and be a part of our discussion. 347-539-5639.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.